We've been hearing a lot recently about Afghanistan and, of course, the U.S. drawdown in Afghanistan, and they're bringing all the equipment and all the troops home, and they're going to be out pretty soon. But there are partners who were there. A lot of people who did some very difficult and important work for the U.S. military and NATO who are Afghans are being left behind. Give us some brief background, and then I've got a couple of questions I'd like to ask you.
Sure. So I got involved with this organization when I worked to bring over my Afghan interpreter. I deployed with the Army. I was in Iraq in 2008, 2009, where I worked with interpreters there. And then I went to Afghanistan in 2011, 2012. That's where I met my interpreter, Khalid, just an incredible partner, much more than just a linguist translator. He was a cultural advisor, a mentor. He really was the reason for our success in our specific mission. And long story short, I came back to the United States in 2012, started helping him with his special immigrant visa, or what we'll talk about as the SIV application.
Yep.
And that's meant, it was meant to be a streamlined process for those individuals who stood shoulder to shoulder with United States forces in the global war on terrorism. I'll give you a little bit more history after that. But long story short, Khalid had a certificate of appreciation from, at the time, U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, James Cunningham. He had 6 polygraphs to get on the base that he passed. So I'm thinking that this guy should just breeze right through the 14-step process. And for your listeners and readers, JJ, if they want to know more about the 14-step process, there's a 2014 episode by the one and only John Oliver dedicated to this, the bureaucratic morass that this process was, again, in 2014, and it's only gotten worse. So luckily for us, I worked with No One Left Behind. I learned how to reach out to members of Congress, and Senator Kaine's office from here in Virginia was just wonderful. They followed up with the State Department every 90 days for about a year, until Khalid's case broke loose and he got here successfully with his family in 2016.
Okay.
Sadly, that's a standard case takes about 3.5 years to navigate the process.
Okay. And that is sad, because it's only supposed to take about 9 months, I understand, at the max. Let me ask you a few questions. I've been embedded before on several occasions with the military and have been to Afghanistan 3 times and recall being in Kalat, down in Zabul province with some folks from the Army, Air Force, et cetera, and NATO, and these interpreters and these partners from Afghanistan were just absolutely brilliant and very, very helpful. Give us briefly some idea how many of these folks there are out there that need these visas that were helpful, that are sort of standing in just waiting.
Yes, thank you. Numbers are important. So when this program was started, initially first in Iraq and then expanded to Afghanistan, it was only supposed to be 50 visas per year. But based on the need, and especially in Afghanistan, since 2009, it's been the Congress has appropriated roughly 4,000 visas, give or take. Sometimes it's a little bit less. This year, we're asking for a lot more. At the height of 2011, there were, according to the Congressional Research Service, approximately 50,000 contractors providing interpreter and translation abilities to our military in both theaters. So think about that. So that's about 25,000 employed personnel just in Afghanistan alone, which brings us to today. So we know from the last State Department report, there are 18,000 applicants. And it's very critical for you and your listeners, JJ, to know that, number one, the SIV process, that's a special immigrant visa process, by law does not fall under the refugee cap. It's completely separate. So that's good. So you hear all these, you know, conversations about the refugee cap. It doesn't apply to military interpreters. With that, the second point I want to make is that the one visa counts for the primary applicant. So it does not include, or that number does not include family members. So when I say there's 18,000 applicants currently waiting for the embassy and the State Department to process their visa applications, that really, you know, multiplied by 4, you get around 70, 75,000 people, once you include family members who are kind of in limbo and have been in this weird gray area for many, many years.
Well, and that is indeed a sad situation and something that needs to be addressed. So just if you would drill down on what exactly, briefly, what exactly is the holdup?
Yeah. So again, 14-step process. The visas bounce between, ready for, I'll do this quickly. Kabul to DC, DC to Nebraska, Nebraska to the National Visa Center, back to the applicant, back to the embassy, blah, blah, blah. It's a very cumbersome, paper-based, time-intensive process where there are redundant security screenings. As mentioned, my interpreter had base access and he'd been polygraphed. That that information set is not used by the State Department. That's a DOD data set, same with the biometrics. And up until recently, we just learned that the DOD was sharing their biometrics. So the burden of proof is on the applicant to provide a letter of recommendation from their U.S. supervisor and a verification letter of employment from their employer. The reality is that many of, and JJ, as you noted, you know, being overseas, maybe you had interpreters that were working directly with you. They're now reaching out to you years later saying, sir, I need a letter of recommendation. Do you remember me? Or trying to find you. A perfect example of how just what a mess this is most of the military over the last 20 years had a very standardized email, right? First dot middle initial, that last name at say army.mil. The DOD migrated everyone over to enterprise email, which has a different nomenclature. So now all these Afghans are reaching out to their contacts, but with the wrong email. So we're telling people to go, these applicants to look on Facebook and LinkedIn. And sadly, there's only so much they can do unless a U.S. supervisor vouches for their quote unquote faithful and valuable service. And as right now, they have to provide 2 years of that to qualify for a visa.
Okay. The question I was going to ask you is what's the answer, but you've sort of gotten into that already, but I'm thinking there's more to this. And you probably have some suggestions for the U.S. government and perhaps the military on how to improve, one, the speed of this process, and also to make clear that people understand why these people desperately need to get out.
Yes. So let's start with that last question first. They're being hunted. So No One Left Behind undertook just research on our own because the Department of Defense and the Department of State do not track numbers of casualties or the numbers of interpreters hired during all of this. I mean, it really highlights that our allies were an afterthought for 20 years. And luckily they are now on the front pages, but we're very worried that it might be too late. So No One Left Behind undertook research. We went through 6 years of emails and last year of Facebook messages because Facebook cuts you off after that. And we identified over 300 instances. And these are just anecdotes that we've heard from the applicants themselves, from interpreters on the ground in Afghanistan. So we're only talking Afghanistan. 300 instances of family members and interpreters being killed because of their affiliation with the United States.
Yeah.
We documented this and we've got a spreadsheet. We've got all as much information as we've been provided. We gave that to the State Department Office of Inspector General for their 2020 report to Congress last year. This is important because a year ago in June, the report came out. It went to the major armed services, foreign affairs, judiciary committees in both chambers. And one of the top recommendations was to increase the staff here in DC by 50 people. So we're very happy that Secretary Blinken has taken that step. It only took a year, but at least it's the first of hopefully many steps. And again, for your listeners, this is a very serious issue. The big picture that broke last week, the Iraqi P2 program has been suspended indefinitely because of massive visa fraud. Reuters broke the story, and the investigation was significantly bigger than what was initially described by the indictments in January. So there is a very real concern that security vetting be done correctly and properly. The SIV process is technically the fastest process for anyone in these high-risk countries to come to the United States. So our effort and what we're encouraging the Department of State and the Department of Defense to lean in and help the Department of State with is to add more people. We know There was a surge of employees to the embassy earlier this month. And by the way, they were able to do over 1,600 visas last spring. That report still isn't come out yet, but Ambassador Wilson did explain this in the press, and I think it was NPR last week as well. So we know there's progress with more hands on deck. From our perspective as a nonprofit, we are inundated with requests from veterans who are saying, let me help with the investigations. Let me help. I'm already cleared. Let me volunteer. And we haven't gotten that offer yet. So it's a very frustrating dynamic where we have this surge of interest. We know what's needed. We understand the rules and the mission of why the 14 steps need to be there. We're working with Congress to eliminate some of the steps. But we're also racing the clock, JJ, and we're keeping an eye on the July 4th NATO withdrawal date and seeing how that compares to ours.
Yeah. Last thing. While I was there, I met a couple of interpreters and
James Mirvaldis is chairman of No One Left Behind. JJ Green, WTOP News.